too windy today.
Oh, it's Thursday.
So am I. Let's go have a drink.
All right. Well, welcome to another session of Brookings Cafe. My name is Jim Newman, and I am co-hosting today with Dan Sherman and Ray Gary, and with a special guest of John Dean. And John Dean is a former resident here of Brookings, fellow musician, a trained engineer, a curious mind, and a qualified artist. In fact, you may have seen many of his paintings around town in, say, the library or at the newspaper office. And John and I have this unusual claim to fame of being the very first band to set foot on the stage in Azalea Park, opening up for Country Joe McDonald back in 1994, five, somewhere around there. It's almost ancient history at this point, John. But at any rate, I am really happy that John is up here visiting. And I said, hey, John, you've done a lot of research on the JFK assassination. How about if I could get some time on the radio to have you discuss what you have found out in your in-depth research? And he said, you could do that? And I said, well, absolutely. You got to know the right people. So anyway, that's why we're in the studio today. And we are going to have John describe what he's discovered in his in-depth research with regards to the John F. Kennedy assassination. It's hardly a settled subject. It is part of the conspiracy theory grab bag of all sorts of things on the planet. But at any rate, John, I'm going to hand the program over to you, and you can give us a start as to how you got interested in this whole thing.
All right. I'm John Dean. I'm the subject and of this interview. And I have a friend who studied the JFK assassination and had a book called Best Evidence. Best Evidence was written by David Lifton. And David Lifton demonstrated that the government changed the wounds on JFK after the assassination in Bethesda, Maryland. And he has proof of that. He presents in his book. It became a bestseller. It was very popular. And that followed Mark Lane's book of A Rush to Judgment, where Mark Lane demonstrated that the Warren Commission really rushed to a judgment. Now, I'm here to say that what they produced basically was like they use in the government filibuster. It was like 44 inches of information that made it very difficult to peruse and get an idea of what's going on. And most of it is garbage stuff. They don't even agree with their own conclusions on some of the experiments they made. And I have gotten in contact with some of the major known researchers in that area, David Lifton himself, and I worked personally with each other for 2 or 3 years. And then I got in touch with James Fetzer, who is the author of many, many important JFK discoveries. And then there's a scientist from Australia who's a PhD in optics in physics named John Costella. And he and I became friends, and I got to meet him, work with him, present my ideas. And to this day, we remain in touch. He has a copy of my autobiography. So when I did my autobiography, it was the idea that I could lay down the history of my artwork and engineering work for people to read about if they were interested. And I had literally a couple of thousand pictures of jewelry and paintings and carvings that I had done that my daughter said she'd like me to document. And I knew I had the research material that involved the JFK assassination. And I studied the national economy of the United States of America, and came to believe that deficit financing is the tool of the rich man to bankrupt the government and move the funds into the hands of private citizens, because overspending on a government contract means they're over contracting services outside the government. That's mm-hmm. what it means. And so you find private sources ending up with that money. It might be $1 or $2 trillion a year that rate occurs. And that started with Ronald Reagan in 1980. So should I keep going and get into?
Continue along the how you got interested in Kennedy and.
Oh, okay. So this friend asked me if I wanted to borrow his best evidence book, and I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll take a look at it." And after I got it home, just 1 hour of reading convinced me that our nation had been given the mushroom treatment. You know. Put in the dark and mm-hmm. fed manure.
Lots of manure.
Very fresh manure.
Yeah.
So that it was definitely an untruth, and that really aroused my energy. I was 18 years old when JFK was shot, and I came out of a Calculus 1 exam at University of California, Santa Barbara in Campbell Hall, and was walking toward the commons when some girls ran by screaming, and what's going on? Oh, the president's mm-hmm. been shot. I was horrified by all of that, and the school closed down that weekend, and I went back home, and I cried when I saw little John salute his dad, mm-hmm. you know, when he went mm-hmm. by in a coffin that next Monday.
So. Yeah, just as a quick interjection, a friend of mine wrote a play when I was in college, and it's centered around the idea that where were you when JFK was shot? Well, now that speaks to our generation, but younger people don't really understand that. But people in our generation, we remember full well where we were and what we were doing when we heard the news. It was that significant.
I was working for a newspaper, and I got to watch them put together the extradition and stood at the teletype. Not many people know what a teletype unless you're a fan of old movies. But watching everything come clicking in, and then finally it clicked in that he was dead, and we put out the extra, and it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I remember at 10, I was sitting in front of my grandparents' Curtis Mathis TV watching a program, and all of a sudden it got broken into by, you know, the big news story, and I was just at 10 years old. I really didn't know much about the guy, but I was just like, I was kind of in shock, you know, so we do all remember where we were when mm-hmm. that happened.
Mm-hmm. I was very impressionable at that age, and I was willing to leave school and join any military force that would be hunting for the source of his slayers. Mm. And when they started off by saying he was shot from the front on the first day, and then it changed to Oswald overnight, I was a little unsettled by that. I mm-hmm. But not available to spend time studying it because I was just starting my life out and needed to do my engineering studies. So anyhow, getting back to the reading of the David Lifton book, I was profoundly energized by that reading, mm-hmm. and it happened at a time in my life where I just turned 62, and because of my heart disease, I'd had 2 heart attacks and a few stents put in by that time. Mm-hmm. I decided to start Social Security early at age 62 rather than wait until 67. And so I did. In the next year, with the bank collapse and real estate market collapse, right. 2008, mm-hmm. My art business went down to a third of what it was, had been previously. But the start of the Social Security more than made up for that, or about made up for that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I could then, I could do more in outside issues than just art, than just dealing and creating art.
Could we back up just a second? If I heard you right, you said that the initial report said he was shot from the front, and
yes.
then overnight it changed that he was shot from
That's
the
correct.
Rear. That's correct. I thought they rushed into the book depository immediately after, and there were people pointing up at the window and things like that.
more people swarm toward the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
Immediately after the shooting.
Which was more than likely what we talked about earlier with sonic booms from the bullets.
Well, even people in the depository went to the grassy knoll.
Okay.
The grassy knoll was the big gathering point after the shooting. And the where you'll find the first announcement and a shot from the front is by a guy named Kilduff, who was a spokesman for the government or something. And he made the first announcement on the air and pointed to his, he said, the doctors told me it was a simple matter of JFK being shot in the head. And he points to his right forehead.
Hmm.
The exit wound on JFK was lower left in the back, a 1x3-inch longitudinal wound that blew out the back of his head. It mm-hmm. was absolutely clear as day from the Parkland staff that that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they later, by the way, gather together 10 years after the fact. You're talking 22 medical professionals giving their opinion on where his wound was. And it was not the same as what was presented at the autopsy by the government. And then photos.
The autopsy was just done by the highest ranking physician. He wasn't a forensic pathologist, and nobody there knew anything about forensic pathology.
Well, the man was a forensic pathologist, but it's what he taught, and he had never done a gunshot autopsy.
Hmm, that's
and here he gets the one for the president.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a matter of rank.
It was pretty rank, yeah.
I was just thinking that.
There may have been a brand new captain doctor who had done dozens of autopsies, but
Colonel
got to do it.
Yeah, he was a commander.
Okay.
James Humes was his name, who was the lead in the autopsy at Bethesda. What I'm here to talk about is my most recent discovery of what I think is new evidence. I could be wrong, but I've heard talk of the policeman on the grassy knoll behind a stub wall that supposedly took a shot at the president. And strangely enough, when you take, this is the Mary Mormon photograph.
Wait a minute, the policeman took a shot at the president?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it turns out he was a Dallas police officer, just been hired within the previous 3 months. So a shooter was brought in by the police department. He even trained the day before, and you can read about that in Treachery in Dallas, which is a publication that came out to discuss Dallas's connection to the assassination. The guy's name is Roscoe White.
And so he was a Dallas police officer, and it was known to the Dallas police that he was going to be shooting? Is that what you said?
Well, it would have been known to the captain of police for sure.
Okay.
But I'm not sure how many of the police officers themselves would be knowledgeable about it.
So he was on the other side of the fence at the grassy knoll?
Yeah, there's a stub wall that leads up to the cupola that is that like a tower that's at one of the corners of this pergola.
Uh-huh.
They're called, it's called a pergola where they were. And what's his name? The Zapruder was over on another wall over here off to the side that protrudes more uh-huh. towards the front steps. And Zapruder was standing on top of one of these things, so he'd have a good vantage point. And he basically could pan the whole deal from left to right and see Jack from the point at which he entered Elm Street to the point at which he departed from that location. It turns out that Zapruder's film was altered more than in one way. It had the opening section of the movie where the president has made the turn and is about a third away down the street when suddenly Zapruder's film, as we got from the government after their fixing of the film, showed it at that point when Zapruder supposedly had taped him turning that corner. It's really important that we understand that that top corner on Elm, where the president turned left, was an optimal shooting point for shooters in the Daltex building that was right across the street from the book depository.
Okay.
And there were multiple shooters on the west face to that. That is my assertion.
Okay, now we're going to stop at the assertion because it's time to do a little station identification. So you are listening to KCIW, low power community FM radio, located in Brookings, Oregon, 100.7 on the FM dial. And we will continue on with the show. So, assertion two.
All right. My study showed that there was a little girl named Tina Towner standing at that corner following the instructions of her father, panning the limo as it turned onto Elm. And I had never...
A little girl was taking film?
A little girl.
Okay.
And her father was there. Her mother was there as well. And he was also filming, and she may have been filming as well. Now, they were in a key spot on the inside corner of that turn, so she actually stepped out in the street, so she had an unobstructed view of the presidential limousine turning left onto Elm. In her film, even with I contend the government remade that film, and that's pretty easy to see when you look at it. When you look at it frame by frame, you can see that funny things are happening. They cross out figures. They put in a 4-second blank space. What was important to me was, and I read some other researcher identified Jack Kennedy starting to wave his hand and then pulling it back. And so I took a look at that, and I determined that he did that motion of retracting his hand in 0.22 seconds, which is pretty abrupt, but I didn't have an understanding of how abrupt that was, so I ran an experiment with my wife, and I said, well, let me see how many reps I can do of opening and closing my hand in 5 seconds. So I did this, and I did 14.
Let the record show he was opening and closing.
He was actually okay. Doing what he says he was doing.
How fast I can open and close my hand, you know, faster than you can see. As yes. My hand's a blur.
Dead air is the enemy of radio.
Okay, so my wife timed it, and it turned out that my fastest interval worked out to 0.18 seconds compared to his 0.22. So I was a little faster than the president, but it was clearly in the same ballpark. It was in the same order of magnitude. The president was jerking his hand out of the way. Now, why would a president be jerking his hand out of the way in the middle of a wave? And my contention is that's when the first bullet was fired.
And that was from the front?
That would be from the back.
From the back?
Yeah, that's correct. When he turns the corner onto Elm, he's showing his back to the people in the Daltex building. This is a view down Elm where the limo is at the corner
mm-hmm.
of getting ready to come down Elm, and the driver has made this wide turn and almost run into an island there that separates Elm from a service street that's right next to it in front of the depository. So what the guy that's the superintendent of the depository, Roy Truly, testified to the Warren Commission that he saw the limo come to a stop, or a very near stop, almost, you know, slowed way, way down,
mm-hmm.
and the driver cranked the wheel to reorient the limo to go on to Elm, and in the process of doing that, he put JFK on the right corner. He put JFK on the right corner of the rear of the limo with respect to shooters in that depository, and that on the other side of JFK was open street down mm-hmm. Elm. Now, there was no other way for those shooters to shoot at JFK, but at that point, or with that kind of safety involved.
Are you saying that the driver set JFK up? Am I understanding that?
Absolutely.
Well, that was one of the things that I recall from all of the testimony, et cetera. One of the big questions was, why didn't they just go this way, which was a straight shot? They turned and made a little detour and went like this, then had to turn back, which slowed everything down.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right on there. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that was the safest path, was to go straight through on Maine. They could have maintained 35 miles an hour, and nobody could pick him off either longitudinally or sideways at that speed, even a great marksman. So what they chose to do was unsafe. Not only did they change the route for that sense of unsafetiness.
And that was at the last minute, is that right?
It was within the last 2 weeks.
I mean, the change in the route.
The change in the route was in the last 2 weeks.
So they knew about the change in the route 2 weeks prior to that.
Right.
And yet nobody said, well, this isn't a cool idea. And
Nobody said that because it involved the governor of Texas, John Connally, calling the White House directly and talking to the president, assuring him that he'd be safe.
We weren't nearly as assassination conscious as we became in the next couple of years with all the, he was riding in an open car, for crying out loud. Today they ride in a tank.
Yes, very much so. So when he turned that corner, that's when I declare that they shot at JFK when he was near that island where the driver had to crank the wheel to orient Jack in a way that made it a safe shot for those shooters. Because they're right behind him, 60, 70 feet away. Is going slow as a snail. You got a four times scope on. Bang. Ready, aim, fire. But only they miss. So I'm thinking somebody messed with their rifles. I thought that over, because the same shooters are the only shooters available in the scenario for the known position of shooters to have also tried to get Jack when he was lined up with the sewer manhole cover down the street. And the sewer manhole cover down the street had 3 points of contact of the bullet. One in the grass on the near side toward Elm, on the north side of that part of the street. One on the cover itself went ping, because it hits metal. And then another one on the concrete around the cover on the south side. So it was kind of like they were about maybe 4 or 5 feet apart, which and they all would have had to come from the west facing Deltex shooters.
Could I interrupt you just a second? So we're making this wide turn and in order to line him up for some people who are going to shoot at him. And they missed because your theory is that that somebody messed with the gun?
I'm thinking that because it
seemed... Who would have messed with the gun?
You know, Oswald could have messed with the gun, you see, because he had nothing against Kennedy. He actually liked Jack Kennedy. And he was a kind of a weird agent. They had really set his life up so that the FBI could use him as a patsy. I mean, because they had another lookalike.
So when did Oswald get to mess with the gun?
I'm sorry?
This other shooter is not in the depository. He's a block away, or he's at the back by the turn?
Oh, this Daltex building is across the street from...
Right, I've seen pictures of it and seen the theories of...
The Daltex building is this one here.
When did Oswald get to mess with that gun? Or when would he have?
Well, he was a member of the crew...
Okay.
And he could have messed with the weapons in the days preceding.
Okay.
There was a carload of shooters that came in from the Miami area a day or two early, led by Frank Sturgis. And he had Marita Lorenz with him, who bailed on the assassination and left town. She ended up becoming a key witness for a magazine that was sued by E. Howard Hunt for defamation of character, to prove the case against E. Howard Hunt that indeed he was there And in fact, he was the paymaster for the JFK assassination.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt your flow there. You were continuing, but I just
yeah.
a little confused. Okay, I'm sorry.
So that's a little tidbit that's fairly important to the overall story, because E. Howard Hunt, I don't know whether you remember, but him, Frank Sturgis, showed up in the Watergate deal. Both of them did jail time as a result of being part of the burglar group mm-hmm. that invaded the Watergate. And those guys were directly connected to Nixon. They had him. That's why he had to resign. And then he picked Ford. Now, Ford, this is really funny, see. Ford has been part of this group that helped cover up the JFK assassination by changing the summary to say that the shot in the back hit him in the back of the neck rather than lower down the back, because it's impossible to connect the lowered back shot to the neck if it's coming from a building up above anywhere.
I think it was Nova. The PBS show, which is pretty neutral about all this, they did a reenactment of that. I'm sure you must have seen it. Using all the bells and whistles you need to do these type of things with all the ballistics experts and things like that, and they pretty clearly demonstrated that the shot did come from the back, went through his elbow or something like that, and it was able to hit Connolly, this one, the magic bullet or the pristine bullet or whatever, and pretty much showed that was very, very, very possible. You must have seen that, either, if not that program, you've seen that.
Similar ones. Yeah, I've seen similar ones that give you a digital replay of that shot. Mm. And it's kind of like they're there turning the corner as the bullet goes by. And, you know, it's very easy to deceive the viewer as to making it look like a straight shot, but it really to be a straight shot from that depository and enter the T3 position, it mm-hmm. would be going left. It would be going past Connolly's position. He was directly in front of the president, and it would be angularly to the left, more toward the Connollys.
Okay, I didn't mean to set up an argument with them. I'm just pointing that out.
Yeah,
That is another argument. You
yes, and okay. then so I basically refute that with common sense.
Okay,
and people have done that for years. Refuted the Warren Commission report with common sense, like, hey, if he was there, this is the angle. Wound should exist at that angle. As an example, the wound that hit Governor Connolly was measured by the surgeon who took the bullet out at 27 degrees down angle. Now, if he was from the book depository, if he was from the book depository and there was some connection to that bullet, that's a 20 degree down angle.
Hmm.
So the
head doesn't have anything to do with this?
I'm sorry?
The tilt of the head at that particular time doesn't...
It would, yes. It would, except that when you look at the president when for the next shot,
mm-hmm.
he's in the Zapruder film.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming out from behind the freeway signal, the freeway sign.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see him go like this, you know, like
to
that.
To get this angle through the wrist, you'd have to know exactly where the wrist was when the bullet was fired. I mean, you could
sure.
have been like this, could have been like that, could have been...
He was hit in the back of the wrist.
All right.
And then I'm saying it's very unlikely that the bullet came out, the bullet came out below the right nipple, about 2 inches, that he would have had his wrist in a position to enter the back of the wrist, shatter that bone, and then enter this thigh over here. It would have been one of these things where okay. he would have had...
Again, let the record show that the witness is in a very contorted position right now.
Brought his knee up to his chest and put the wrist in between, and you know, and that's about how they would have
okay.
had to do that, you know, to make that work. So I'm saying that, you know, just physically, if you just look at in a simple physical argument, you know, the government loses. And the people that support the contention that Oswald was the shooter are people that are making up videos that are untrue, that are scientifically not correct. I'm a scientist.
Okay. I'm sorry, Jim.
That's okay. Yeah, you know, it's like when I heard the first mention of the magic bullet theory, I just went, "What?" It just didn't make common sense to me. Now, I haven't studied this in depth like John has, but it's just like, It's one of those Arsenio Hall moments.
Do you think Oswald was obviously up there in the book depository building in the third floor or whatever floor it was?
He was
with
in the lunch,
with the rifle.
Probably in the lunchroom.
The lunchroom of?
Of the book depository.
Okay.
So because the gun he was there with his fingerprints and everything?
He was there 90 seconds later when Officer Marion Baker heard the third shot, raced to the corner, threw his motorcycle down, ran across the street in the front door of the depository. The superintendent met him there and ran in with him, and the two of them ran to the far corner where the stairwell was,
right.
Went up that stairwell to the second deck. They looked back, and the officer saw somebody in the lunchroom, so he came toward that. Mm-hmm. And that someone that he saw was Oswald sipping on a Coke when he got there, as calm as could be. Now, there's not enough time between Oswald's final shot, if he was on the sixth floor shooting at the president, to do the things that that shooter was...
Where was the rifle recovered?
The rifle, there were two rifles recovered.
The one that Oswald supposedly used.
Well, it's important to note that there's two because, that colors the picture of the government research right away. There's a Mannlicher Carcano was found against the east wall of the book depository on the sixth floor. And it was stacked there.
This is where in relationship to the window?
It would be if you're looking at the building to the right of the window against the wall.
In the same room?
In the same room.
Okay.
Okay. But behind a whole bunch of boxes that hid it.
Yeah.
Not in clear view. So if he had put it back there, he would have had to move boxes, get it there, close this thing, you know, like that. But he not only would have had to do that, he would have had to wipe the whole weapon down from no fingerprints.
There were none?
Yeah. And there were three cartridges found lined up sitting on the floor near that window. He would have had to wipe those down and prop them up in that position before he started running to get to the stairwell.
So they were just sitting on their end?
They were. When the police found them, they were sitting there stacked together, and they later found the rifle in that where I told you.
And these were unfired cartridges that are...
No, these are fired ones.
Fired ones.
Yeah, so it gives the impression that whoever was there fired three rounds.
Well, he was a Marine, so he's probably very neat.
He's very OCD, right?
Right.
And upon that bit of OCD news, we're going to take a little station break for KCIW, your local low-powered community radio station in Brookings, Oregon, 100.7 on the FM dial. We encourage you to check out our website, kciw.org, and we've got a slew of other podcasts available. And speaking of podcasts, we'll have links to John Dean's information that he's showing us in the studio so you can get an idea of what we've been looking at. And
you're promising that?
Promising that. Yeah, it's all on your website, and we'll give you a pitch at the end of the show for that. So
all right,
yeah,
so I don't have to mention it.
All right, so now back. We've got the one gun in the same room as Oswald, sixth floor depository, with the casing standing upright in a nice row, so
right.
OCD Marine going on here.
Well, in theory, if he had been the shooter, he would have had to wipe off those cartridges because they'd have his fingerprints. And then to have to stack them, well, first of all, when you eject that, it'll fly within 15 feet in some unknown direction. So he had to go around collecting these things, then clean them, then stack them. And then he had to move that rifle to the corner of the room, turn around, and start his path back to the stairwell. Now, the stairwell is in the catty corner of that building. Mm-hmm. So he's in the front left. The stairwell's over here in the rear left. And so he had, unfortunately, on his floor, there's so many boxes of books, he couldn't run between the pillars and do a beeline on that path. He had to do an L path to get over to that stairwell. Now he's going to have to descend four flights of stairs. And this is a race between him And the officer who jumped off his motorcycle and ran across the street into the building and ran up that first flight of stairs to the second story and then saw this guy, and it was Oswald. So I'm saying he can't be in two places, and he didn't have enough time to do all the things that he would have had to do, including wiping himself off so that he wouldn't have any gun residue from having fired a rifle, because they have a test for that.
Mm-hmm.
They take soft wax.
That applies a lot more for a handgun than it does for a rifle, however, and especially a bolt action, because a bolt action, when the firing actually takes place, the action is closed. So
yeah.
Everything goes out the front.
And
then when you
that.
Open the bolt, yeah. you do get a little bit of the residual
Yeah, but the
stuff
residual
that's in the
is
barrel.
Right near your face.
Yeah, but it's still not much.
Well, you they know. Use
it's
that.
Not coming under pressure like it would out, for instance,
gotcha.
On a revolver out the side.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Automatic pistol.
But they do use that as evidence yeah. when somebody uses a rifle. Mm-hmm.
It's not considered good evidence anymore. It's been shown to have false positive, because what it's looking for is the same type of thing that's found in a lot of garden fertilizers. So
yeah,
defense
nitrates.
Attorneys have had a lot of fun with that
right.
particular thing.
Yeah, I agree.
But it would be false positives, not false negatives.
Right, but he did measure positive on both hands.
For gun residue?
Yeah, well, let's put it this way.
Oswald.
Mm-hmm. And I contest that was ink from his business. You know, he's handling papers. And he gets printer's ink on his hands. That gives a positive reading for this test.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
check it out and if you want.
Yeah.
But he did measure positive on both hands. Now, I would make an argument right there that, gee, if he shot officer so-and-so on the street with five rounds or whatever, what would make him change hands and, you know, and get soiled on both hands? You know, it'd be like, normally you just, a pistol, you know,
yeah.
one hand, you know. So,
if you had the other hand close by, though, and he had, as I understand it, he had a Smith & Wesson revolver, and those notoriously shoot out the sides as well. So if you've got your hand over here some way to the side of the gun, you're going to get some powder on the...
I'm picturing the gun nut bumper sticker that says gun control means using both hands.
Okay. And I'll give you that thought.
Okay.
You know,
that's a good argument.
As possible, yeah. I'll give you that thought. But there's another problem.
Mark here, that one.
Okay. There's another problem. The gun that was used to shoot the officer that died was an automatic .22.
Okay.
Was an automatic, and they use different bullets than what a revolver uses.
Not .22.
His revolver was a .38. It was a Smith & Wesson. I forgot the name of it. I've got it here on the whatever. But it was a .38, and you're talking about an automatic that's a .22. Yeah, that definitely is a different bullet.
Yeah.
Or different than the .38. So are you saying that Oswald did shoot Tippit?
That's correct.
Okay.
In fact, I'll go on to say that the person that did shoot Tippit was the same Roscoe White that hit the president on the right side of the head when he got down in front of the grassy knoll right before the fatal shot.
Oh, so you said Oswald didn't shoot him. I thought you said he did shoot him.
No, I'm saying he didn't shoot
him. He didn't, okay.
And the person that did was this Roscoe White, the police officer. And that testimony shows up in a book on the Texas involvement in the assassination.
Okay.
And there's a story about that that's real quick, and that is
We've got about 20 minutes left, and this is going to get convoluted. Can we...
All right, we can,
because I really want to kind of get to the,
yeah.
the end or the punchline.
All right,
yeah.
All right. So anyhow, there was a kid, a private citizen, whose dad was a policeman that was there in the bathroom, in where the policemen go to the bathroom. He was embarrassed about going in the bathroom on the hall where all the reporters were, and his dad or somebody, well, go down where we change, and you know, use that bathroom down there. And when he heard people coming in, he got in one of the commodes and closed the door and stood on the toilet and got quiet. Now, that little boy witnessed what was being said in the room by the officers. And one officer was telling another, you dumb blah, 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 you didn't, you know, you were supposed to shoot Oswald. you know, and instead you shot the officer, you know, and mumble, and, you know, and the guy leaves, you know, and then the boy waits a little while and sneaks out. So he reports that later on in life because it was so horrific to him that he needed hypnosis to bring that out. But he did, and that's reported. That's been reported. So I believe that because who would concoct a story like that? You know, it just seems unusual. Now, Roscoe White actually had a diary, and he wrote in his diary that he killed the president. He shot him in the head. He took three shots. One was a miss on the street. The other hit on the head. And there
and
was
he was the police officer?
He was the police officer.
And he was using a rifle or a handgun?
Oh, he was using a rifle on the mall, on the knoll. On the knoll, yeah. Grassy.
So he's behind the fence?
Well, he's behind that stub ball I mentioned.
Okay. Yeah, he's hidden. I mean, he's not just standing there.
That's correct. He's not just standing there. If you look down at the scene, these stub walls, it's kind of hard for me to get it. Okay, let's see.
Let the record show there are a lot of lines on the map
and
here.
These are on the website.
It's so hard. There, part of the theory here, wasn't there a police officer seen behind the fence there, a uniformed police officer?
Yeah, and that's the same guy.
This would be your boy?
It's the guy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the guy. In fact, he does show up in the Mormon film. My contention is he shows up in the Mormon film. All you need to do is run Mary Mormon the best version you can through Lightroom, an Adobe off-the-shelf program of the day.
Yeah, I have it.
And then use the Pro Sharpener 3 that you have access to under the Photo Edit In selections.
Well, obviously, there's already a sharpened picture someplace. Is that what you have there? Or?
No, well, I actually did this by using Lightroom and then using Pro Sharpener 3.
Okay.
And then I got this image here, which makes it very hard to see, but you can. The images are there.
Where are you getting the originals to do the editing?
Off the internet.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, you look at each one and you blow it up and say, you know, can I work with this? And,
yeah.
You know, some of them are like 600 bits or, you know, just small pictures.
Yeah, there's good and there's bad, yeah.
I don't know how
many times it's been copied and that type of thing. There's a lot of...
Exactly. Yeah. And in fact, I discovered that with all the presentations of the Mormon picture on the internet, you can find government messing with... more than one of those pictures. I have an example here to show two different close-ups of Kennedy's head in the Mormon picture, one of which blacks out his head so you can't see the exit wound, or you can't see you can't see the left hand. See, the president, when he was shot by Roscoe White in the right side of the head up on the mall, he's going toward the tunnel, he gets shot in here. It was a subsonic round that wouldn't perforate his head. It got stuck in his head. And so it would hit the other side of the head on the left. He'd feel that.
Yeah.
So JFK raises up his left hand, which is bloody left hand, had been at his throat, like going down the street like that. He raises it up over here, and then he raises his fist to try to block the shot that killed him. And who raises their fist to block a shot if they don't see the shooter 5 feet away? You know, you see, yeah, that's the idea. So, you know, that's my art for how the scene went down.
So you're contending that the actual driver of the limousine?
Yes.
Had the kill shot?
Yeah.
Interesting.
No, not only interesting, but the guy was an Irish Protestant. from Ireland, who had become, you know, in the government, and he didn't like Irish Catholics.
No, of course not.
and he didn't like pulling overtime to take Jack to his trysts with other ladies outside the White House.
So this shows I guess that's Connally's wife? And Connally looking right at this guy shooting?
Yeah.
And all these years, neither one of them said anything? Well, I guess
they're part of the deal. Connally's the one that lured JFK to get killed.
Well, if you want to live, you don't talk.
You know, and
the other guy is holding the book up. Is that so he can say he didn't say anything, or what's the deal?
No. I'm thinking, for the listeners, your projection.
There's a man in a suit in the passenger seat of the limo.
Yeah.
And he's the Secret Service? Or?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
That's the personal bodyguard of the President of the United States. And here he is holding a blue binder by the side of his head when the fatal shot occurs. Now, the fatal shooter is right next to him as the driver. What do you think he's doing? He's covering his head for shot blast out of the barrel of his pistol. He doesn't want to get hit with any of the specs from that gun.
Where did you get this? Is this something you've developed from questioning people?
Well, this picture here shows that blue binder in the Mormon photo. So that's my, I just colorized it.
Was Jackie part of the deal then too?
Pardon?
Jackie was part of it too?
I hate to say that, but rather than say she was part of the assassination, like she actively wanted, participated in killing the president, I'd like to say she acquiesced to the murder of the president. Right. And I'll tell you why I think she did.
Okay, so let's take a little break right at that point, because now it's getting kind of juicy, because we're going to get to wrap everything up and talk about the who, why, and wherefore of this whole thing. So, again, Jim Newman here with co-hosts Dan and Ray, and guest speaker tonight, John Dean, talking about who shot John F. Kennedy. Very interesting, and you are listening to KCIW Low Power Community FM Radio 100.7 on the FM dial. Podcasts are available at kciw.org. And now we get to the juicy tidbits of the who, what, why, where, and when.
Before we do that, maybe we should qualify, although it's probably obvious, but to somebody it might not be. This is not the infamous John Dean.
No, okay. This is not the governmental John Dean. This is the musician, artist, engineer John Dean.
Right, who lived in Brookings.
Those are just John.
So the question that comes to my mind, okay, so somebody wanted to shoot him. Who? Why?
Okay, I'll tell you that.
I thought you might have an idea about that.
Yeah, somehow I have an idea about that.
So there's many theories that I've heard while John's, looking up his writings, that Kennedy wanted this out of the Vietnam War. He was actively going after, along with his brother, Teddy Kennedy, going after the mob. It's all sorts of different kinds of things. So,
yeah, one of the things that really got the president angry with the CIA was their botch of the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Alan Arkin had something to do with that.
You know, one of the theories, I'm a retired police officer, and Dan is also has police experience, but one of the theories of keeping a secret or committing a crime is the less people that know about it, the better.
Yeah.
If you do it, keep your mouth shut,
right,
you can rob one bank and never rob another bank, have a good hit, and you'll probably get away with it.
Right.
And if you don't tell your girlfriend or don't tell the guys down at the bar. Now, this has got, I didn't even try to count, but you've got at least 6 or 8 people just being grunts, just with guns and just doing the grunt work, let alone the planning work.
There's a spotter.
We've got Secret Service people shooting at him. We've got a whole lot of people part of this conspiracy. What wouldn't have been a simpler way? It seemed like they could have slipped him a Mickey or something and said he had a heart attack.
Well, the what ifs here, I'm not available to talk about, and it's taking my time. I'd like to talk about what actually happened, according to my understanding.
Okay.
Not a what is. You asked me an earlier question that I intended to answer, and that was, why would you want to kill the president? The CIA wanted to kill him because he was going to take away their fighting ability, their armed black ops ability. He was going to take that away and reduce them to information only in his second term. He couldn't do that in his first term because that would be enough information to shock all the voters into thinking that he wasn't strong on defense or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew darn well, you see, the CIA was messing in Vietnam. They got us in Vietnam. the our own CIA, and the military wanted it because they wanted to practice war, because they wanted to develop new planes, because they like fighting. And they, and we're the pawns. You know, we the people are the pawns of the military. War is a rich man's game.
The big guys in the military. Dan and I were both in Vietnam. We didn't want it. Or at least I didn't. I never asked Dan.
Also, Lyndon Johnson had a huge construction company that made millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in Vietnam doing construction projects.
Well, and my understanding is that you can go back as far as you want to go. The American Revolution was financed by English banks, both sides.
Rothschilds.
The Civil War was financed by English banks, both sides.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's and that may be a myth that I picked up from just talking with somebody, but the point is that when you have money involved in it, then it's one of those kind of deals where you invest in both sides because you come out a winner regardless. I mean, you're investing in equipment that's going to be destroyed, et cetera.
So JFK is challenging the CIA.
Yeah, that's okay. So I want to go on from there. Richard Nixon got into politics by answering an ad that Prescott Bush, the father of G.H.W. Bush, put in a local newspaper for Nixon, asking for a malleable attorney interested in politics. And Nixon answered that, and then the rest is history. You know, he made the Congress in 46, 47, somewhere around there. They had him work the commie angle because that was such a hot topic that he got a national rapport doing that. And then Prescott Bush, who was a senator in the 50s, you know, was able to talk Ike into not only running for the Republican Party for the presidency, but taking Dick Nixon as his running mate. Now all of a sudden is what you have is you have a Bush boy one shot away from controlling the United States of America in that time frame.
Let's get back to Kennedy.
Can I do a quick summary of the others?
Okay. Yeah, okay. We've got
military wanted him gone because he wanted to cut back on the
military.
JFK didn't want an arms race. He wanted to tolerate communism and just say, hey, let's agree to disagree and get along. And instead, our budget went up $200 billion during the time of his second term, which is what happened without Jack. Okay, so Big Oil wanted him dead because he wanted to kill the oil depletion allowance. The oil depletion allowance meant like 27% of their net profit would be untaxed. That is a couple, $3 billion in that time frame, a year. Big banking wanted him dead because he wanted to get rid of the Fed and have a national bank and have the banking of the United States of America owned by the government and not by the Fed, which is a privately run organization. The mafia wanted him dead for the reasons you mentioned earlier, Bobby's messing around trying to get him.
I've heard the mafia angle several times,
Yeah, and I think there were mafia present. Certainly Jack Ruby was a member of the mafia. Hoover wanted him dead because Hoover wanted a lifetime position as the director of the FBI, and Congress had made a law that would have limited his, he needed a presidential waiver to do that. Kennedy would have blown him out in the second term. But he had the goods on Kennedy for his philandering and could use that against JFK. That's why JFK was forced to take LBJ as his partner to, you know, in the first place, and keep J. Edgar Hoover. So both of those guys were really big in the cover-up. J. Edgar Hoover, LBJ. LBJ stole the body from Dallas and got it on an airplane and flew it to the phony wound changers at Bethesda. I saw
something recently, and I don't remember. It was very authoritative, though it might have even been Jackie, that after the swearing in, she went into the bedroom and Johnson was sprawled out on the bed with his arms up like a snow angel.
Oh my God. Power is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Hoover wanted him dead. The FBI wanted him dead. Lyndon Johnson wanted him dead, obviously, because that Lyndon was no Kennedy and didn't have the appeal to the public that Jack had. And the only way he was going to become president would be to kill Jack. If he didn't kill Jack, there were investigations following Johnson that would have found him guilty of murder. And in fact, a grand jury was called in like 1984 to assess the guilt of Johnson in the involvement of a murder of a federal official involved in the cotton allotment scam. And the testimony they got led the grand jury to indict Lyndon if he had been alive, but you can't indict a dead man. Right. So, you know, it doesn't make big news either, I guess.
About that. So when it comes to why didn't they come up with a much, much simpler way to kill him, you don't have an opinion about that?
Well, I think they blew it, you know, that they could have done it much more easily, but you know, I'm just a peon, and I'm not a hitman strategist, so
sure
I just soon.
They could have given him a medication that mimics a heart attack. I'm sure there are such things.
Really?
Cleaner, safer.
Yeah.
You don't have 27 people.
But maybe they really wanted to make a public statement, too. It's real possible.
For what purpose?
Oh, well, for doing exactly what it accomplished. It threw the nation into turmoil.
Yeah. And it instills a lot of fear when something like that
happens.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The fact that they could get a Warren Commission together to forget all of the facts of the situation, they did not look at missed shots. There were all kinds of shots in the street. There's a hole in the windshield. There's a hole in the windshield frame. There's dents in the limo. There's the hit on the sewer thing. There's a hit on a sidewalk. There's a hit on the curb. There's two or three hits on the street that were observed. So what I did is I tracked all the hits and worked backwards. Okay?
So in wrapping up,
very quickly in wrapping up, I would like to say that in addition to what I've mentioned here so far, I redid the shots for the entire parade and figured out the most logical sequence to create the position of hit points for the missed shots and got it all to agree magically. You know, and I can't imagine it being any other way now that I've done that.
Where will people be able to find that information, John?
I have a website called peaceandprosperitypath.com. And on that, one of the first articles is how Kennedy was killed by his driver.
Very interesting. Well, it's been an enlightening program, and we want to thank our engineer tonight, Pi White, fellow friend and musician. So we've got music all around us here today. And again, you've been listening to KCIW 100.7 low power community FM radio, and we've got a lot of really interesting podcasts available for you to listen to, and they're accessible through a number of different apps on your smartphones and computers and stuff like that. So,
KCIW.org.
Yeah, KCIW.org, right. Mm-hmm. Very good. Anything else, gentlemen?
That's it.
All right, Dan, Ray, it's good stuff. Thanks for making this opportunity come true.
Well, thank you for bringing an interesting guest.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity.
Right. You bet.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.